Chapter 15. One other consolation was the body. She kept close by in the months that followed. She walked around in an old blood-stained copy of the scintillating first house robes, and you startled whenever you saw her. But you took enormous comfort in watching her pace your sterile, empty quarters, and in watching her kneel before the mummified assembly that lived within the corridors and apses of the Mithraeum. The greatest gift she gave you was that when you laid yourself down on your bed to sleep fully clothed, you would dream of her with an uncanny, profound regularity. You could not, in fact, dream of anything else. In dreaming, you would return to your old bed back in the sanctuary of Dreaber, your childhood bed, getting a little bit short in the toes for you now. You prayed at its foot, no longer bracketed by either gruesome great aunt. Instead, opposite your cot would be the body, her hands neatly folded on the ancient shawl that your mother had always laid on the bed, the electric light in the sconce shining down on the firm musculature of her forearms, the calluses upon those dead palms. Her eyes she kept closed, each wet and frozen lash brushing cheeks blanched by expiration. "I'm afraid," you'd say. She would say softly, in the voice that prickled each hair on your scalp with a sweet, deep electricity. "What of, Harrowhark? Tonight, I am afraid to die." "That is the same fear as failure," she said once. "You don't fear dying. You can tolerate pain. You are afraid that your life has incurred a debt that your death will not pay. You see death as a mistake," you said a little bitterly. "What else is it?" The dead course of the locked tomb, the death of the emperor, the maiden with the sword and the chains, the girl in the ice, the woman of the cold rock, the being behind the stone that could never be rolled away, said in half-confused tone she had never taken with you. "I don't know. I died once. No, twice." But then she had said no more. Another time you said, "I'm afraid of myself. I'm afraid of going mad." Another time, "I'm still afraid of Kithareya the First." And, "I am afraid of God." And again, "Do I have Ortis's eyes? Are these ones mine? I never really looked at them. Beloved, what were my eyes like?" Unfortunately, that time she answered. Sometimes she didn't. Sometimes she talked to you quietly about discursive subjects, and sometimes she didn't say a thing. But now, that which was buried insensate said quite calmly, "She asked me not to tell you." You awoke, flat on the floor in front of the water pump sink, screaming until your throat was broken. When you stared at your bloodshot eyes in the mirror and tried to remember Ortis Nigenad's, you couldn't recall a difference. They were both that deep and fathomless black, the colour Ianthe called black roses, because Ianthe was overfamiliar and frankly a pervert. You tried to imagine Ortis's sad, heavy weariness staring at you from your own mirror. It did not work. You were both terribly relieved and terribly frightened.